Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Amber May Show. So glad you are joining me today. I have an important topic, an important show that I need you to like, share, and subscribe. So I have the founders of Let Our Children Go, Terry and Mark, joining me today on what happened to their kids and how they discovered a child trafficking ring and how they lost their children to this child trafficking ring. And it's an important episode. And so I really need everybody to share the show far and wide. That would be very helpful because we need to let these people know, or let more and more people know, that parents' rights are being overran and every child can be a victim of this. So it's an important show. So if you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com and click the donate button. Or you can go to theambermayshow.locals.com and you can become a $5 monthly subscriber there. Please join me on Telegram. I always add more at The Amber May Show on Telegram. I'm on True Social Amber May, Frank Social Amber May, and I just joined Clout Hub, so you can find me at Amber May there as well. So coming up next, oh, also, before I bring on Mark and Terry, always look at the description below. I have partnered with companies to save you money, and they help support the program. And I have some great promos for you down there, where there's products that are all natural, like soaps and cleansers. So there's a couple of companies down there that are going to save you money. I have doctors that you can trust, because as we talk about the story, doctors and hospitals are going to come involved. There's doctors you can trust, and we need to vote with our wallet. And there's a cell phone company that you can use called Patriot Mobile, and you can switch all your stuff over to there because we have to fight with our wallet. But coming up right now is Mark and Terry. Grateful for you two coming on the program. It's so funny, Terry, because I saw you and your husband Mark on the Stu Peters platform like a while ago, and I had no idea. This whole time we've been talking, you were the one I watched. You were the Terry that I saw on the Stu Peters show. So I'm just so excited to have you on my program. So thank you guys, both of you, very much for coming on the show today. You know, they got their children back, but now I'm highlighting a family who is still fighting for their kids. So let's go back to the beginning of your story, because there's a lot of people that are listening for the very first time and don't know.
Then we were able to get counsel on the recommendation of some people that we knew in church affiliation. And so we met with this individual, and who's been in the system for decades. And we're thinking, oh, that'll work good to our favor. Well, we later found out that worked actually against us. And by all appearances, was someone who was working within the same
ring,
within the same ring that we uncovered.
Oh, I'm so sick right now. This guy is a churchgoer, and he's in the same ring to take children out of homes. That is,
yeah, he had a lot of talk about, you know, all kinds of things Christian, but
oh my God,
it kind of begs the question as to, you know, how extensive are some of these things, but. Anyway, on his recommendation, he said,
"This is attorney number two for you guys."
Yeah, this
and
was.
And they're both involved with this ring,
right? And so this was apparently, this was someone that, you know, he said he was going to represent both of us. And when we went into this, he was like, "Well, on April the 6th, that was when our next appointment was." He said, "Just give me the good health document and I'll take it down there and this shouldn't be a problem." Like, okay, fine. And then we went back and forth a couple of times and said, I need you, Mark, to come with me. And then it was, no, you and I need you and Amy. But Terry had received a set of summons, a second set of summons pursuant to the appointment on April the 6th that were just as ridiculously compiled as the other ones. but he never made it a push to say, oh, Terry needs to come too, and your other kids need to come. It was just Mark and just me and my daughter, Amy. And so I go into the court, and no one makes any attempt, you know, to like take Amy and say, we got to get her over to the hospital right away because she's in this imminent danger. They take her off and interrogate her, and they want me to start talking to the social worker, who was Shaniqua Potter, who her last name now is Tandy. I'm going to fast forward this a little bit, but when we went going to the proceedings, you know, we showed the good health document, and I'm thinking, you know, worst case scenario, the judge will order a third party assessment, and, you know, best case is this is just going to be dismissed and there won't be any problem. Well, the other side says that I forged the good health document. I'm thinking all you have to do is call them, the phone number on the form, call them right now. And so, no, they didn't do that. But what they did do was, Amy stands up in court and addresses the judge and says, I don't want to go to the hospital. I just want to go home. So she gets lectured about not, you know, passing the bar until she passes the bar and becomes a judge. Then she can tell the judge what to do or something like that. And so I'm watching all this unfold. And the judge says that she said, well, I'm ordering Amy to be taken to the hospital. And instead of having like a government official do that, the girlfriend of Terry's father and Terry's half aunt are present in the courtroom, and the judge lets them take Amy out of the courtroom. And the girlfriend of Terry's father, by law, being not a relative by law, she's not married to her father. She should not, by state law, as I recall it, been allowed to be in the courtroom at all. But she was.
I'm just sick that the grandpa is not trying to protect his granddaughter at this point. I'm sick about that.
Because he's part of the scheme. He's part of the scheme to think he's part of this, because the end game is we're going to get the kids and we're going to find a way to get rid of me. Okay. And we're just going to make Terry basically, you know, do our will, you know, while we have the kids. That was their agenda. And this was their part of their scheme. And it, through the course of our investigation, we'll get to this in a minute, as to how big this is and how long this has been going on and how many.
I'm already finding out how big this thing is.
And how many other families are may have been affected for many years. We'll get to that here in a minute. But so after Amy leaves the courtroom, then they, you know, they moved against me. And they said, we just need to detain Mark until we get the other six kids. Okay. So the judge calls Terry at home. And on the phone, brought, you know, loud, the loudspeaker in the court, everybody can hear it. She says, I'm Judge Judith Bartholomew, and I'm ordering you to release your other six kids. And Terry says, no one's going to take my kids away from me, and hangs up on the judge. And that's so we attempt to make a call back. And she was, you know, apparently, you know, she was on another call, or, you know, wasn't able to answer it. And so so then they're like, well, then they move against me and say, well, we just need to put him through the booking process. And so they take
on
me
what behind. Charge?
Exactly. I was never charged with a crime. They never said you're being, you know, like Miranda Rice, like you're under the arrest for whatever, right? They never said that to me. And so, you know, they initially just presented it like a temporary detainment for like a couple hours until we get the other six kids.
That's exactly it.
And so they took me behind the other door, you know, put me in solitary, held me there for a few minutes, and they ran me through the booking process. Did the full body scan, the works, you know, as if I'm a criminal. And I get placed in this confinement with a whole bunch of other people that are like a heightened security area. And, you know, a couple of times before we get into that group placement, it was like a general holding area. And as part of like the processing, and I'm going back and forth after like a few hours asking people, you know, like, why am I still here? And the first one I went to, he said, you're here for another week. You're here until your next court hearing. You're here on contempt. And I'm like, well, that's the first time I heard anyone say contempt. And I'm like, well, contempt of what? I never said anything to anybody in the court on April the 6th. I was just sitting there quiet, you know? And so, I'm thinking, wow, another week. I was like, I've got a job. I've got to get to work. You know, how am I going to get, what am I going to do? And then a few more hours go by, And but because I asked that question of that first corrections officer, because I asked that first question, they put me in solitary because I asked that question. So I'm sitting in solitary for another, I don't know, maybe a couple hours. And then some nice officer walks by and she says, well, as long as you, you know, don't create any problems, you can sit back out here in the general area. So I go back over to another station and I ask a question. I'm like, why am I still here? And they're like, well, you're here on 7 counts of abuse and neglect and $5,000 cash bail for every count. So I'm getting conflicting information from both sides of the same room within a couple hours of each other. Okay. And which I thought was very strange. And then at this time, the things that are unfolding on the other end of this is the police come by the house eventually. But first the girlfriend of Terry's father comes by with a social worker and Amy, and they didn't take her straight to the hospital under the judge's order. They took her back to our house and began moving her things out of our house down to the girlfriend of Terry's father's house. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, it was her aunt.
But anyway, the fact that they didn't take her to the hospital.
Right? Yeah, they didn't take her to the hospital. And so
she's about to die, guys. She's about to die.
They brought her home so she can move her things, walk up and down the street, moving her things down to their house.
Because when you're on death's door, that's exactly what you do, right? You move furniture around. You move out of your home. You're on death's door. So let's move furniture.
You want to talk about 6:45.
Yeah, and so in the midst of all this, and you know, I'm gonna kind of rewind just a little bit, okay? Now the allegation was anorexia nervosa was her condition, and there was only one practitioner that we went to, other than that second one, who gave us a good health assessment, who gave us those phone calls, insisting that we come back, expressing concern that she may be anorexic. But we received paperwork saying that she was severely anorexic. That was compiled apparently by someone in this ring. We later identified probably who it was, but that those documents that were served by Roy Hardy on March 30th, and then what he said to me, according to the DSM-5, Amber, you know, anorexia is a mental health condition, and that would have required a psychiatric evaluation and a thorough physiological assessment to arrive at a legitimate diagnosis. Okay, so there wasn't any legitimate diagnosis because there was no legitimate forensic data taken to arrive at a legitimate diagnosis. This was just someone making a claim of a diagnosis, even though there wasn't one. And so after later that night, after they made those four trips on April the 6th, Amy was put in the hospital against her will for 10 days. Now under state law, under KRS, I think it's 610050, it states that if the allegations pursuant to a child welfare matter involve a mental health condition, that the provisions of Chapter 645 shall be followed, shall being mandatory. Mm-hmm. However, we were not afforded the provisions of Chapter 645, especially in respect to, you know, involuntary hospitalization. You know, our other six kids most likely would not have been taken under that provision because of the allegation of an alleged mental health condition, even though there wasn't one, because there was no legitimate forensics taken. So they didn't follow Chapter 645. And then we could have been involved. And then after 10 days being in the hospital, Amy was not diagnosed with anorexia or nervosa. So instead of giving all of our children back, they moved into other areas and began doing these inquiries into our children in respect to their education. And one thing they came up with was because our children didn't know what grade that they were in, that we were educationally neglecting them. And I'm thinking, now what law says that I have to tell my child that what grade they're in, especially when I'm homeschooling them year round? That's a freedom choice. They're not in public or private schools, so it's not important for us to tell them what grade they're in. In fact, it's in our view, we think it's kind of counterproductive to give them labels like that. That's just our opinion. People can have other opinions, but you know, there were no grades in respect to how we were educating our children. So because they came up with that count, then that's where they were moving down into all these other areas. And so they have all seven of our children, they're holding them hostage. And this is where it ties into what I said about the big picture and setting the stage at the beginning, what's happening to many other families. once they get your kids, they will want, as part of the fraudulent operation, they will want you to comply with a case plan where they will force services upon parents, and as they did with us, in like a psychiatric evaluation or psychological evaluation, what they call it, anger management, drug testing, family counseling, anything else that they want to come up with. And for every one of those services they can force upon a parent, then they get additional Title IV revenue money. And they also get Title IV revenue streams for every incarcerated parent, which I think kind of lent itself to how they came up with eventually getting me in into the slammer, so to speak, because that opened up all these additional revenue streams that the American people are paying for. Okay, so what you're funding through your Social Security money. And then what happens is, and it's a rare thing, they claim that their goal is reunification, but that is an extreme rarity. What really happens is they're placed not with relatives, because there's little to no Title IV money that flows out compared to a foster placement. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about all of the big money flowing out for, and all the call for foster parents, that this is part of the scheme. And people who are not aware of the scheme, how good people who might otherwise think that they're doing a good thing are being used by dark forces to facilitate this scheme.
And I'm so glad you said that, Mark. I'm really glad, because I know some foster families, and these are good people, and sure, their hearts are to help children. Sure. And now all these families that I know, I have to wonder, were they all lied to about the original parents? Like, now you're one of several families that I've spoken to, and I have to ask myself, did all those foster families get lied to about the original parents, that they were decent human beings that the government just snatched from their home?
Yeah,
that's questioning everything. Where these foster families mean well, the ones I know there's some terrible ones out there. I've interviewed women, people that have been in the foster system, and they've had terrible experiences, but the foster parents I know, I'm like, they're great people. They want to adopt these children. They fall in love with these kids. And I'm just wondering, were they all lied to now? I can't help but wonder that.
Well, I'll answer the question and say many of them are, you know, and there are good people that are being used. And you know, the narrative is that, oh, the parent did something to create a situation of abuse, neglect, or dependency. And mm-hmm. that's enough for some people, right? Because mm-hmm. people care about kids, mm-hmm. right? And some of these prospective foster care providers, yeah, there are people who may do it for the right reason, but there's also other ones. There's child traffickers who are getting older kids and they're trafficking the kids. And then there's other people who do it for money, because, Amber, with every child taken like this to the prospective foster parent, there can be up to $2,000 a month per child that's paid out to the foster provider. So, you know, you look at maybe a family of five at $2,000, you're going to be taking in maybe up to $10,000 a month. And then for special needs children, it could be even more than that. And we know of families, we know of other families in other states where children are ripped out of two-parent homes, placed with single-parent young people under 25 with, you know, caring for three kids. And, you know, that's $6,000 a month. Well, why would you need to work anywhere else if you're just, you know, and then the state agencies are getting paid that huge Title IV money.
Correct.
You know, all of the state governments are being funded like this. And so it's a very wicked, dark scheme. And, you know, one question for all the good people out there who are considering it or maybe participating in it, you know, one question that should probably be asked is there a criminal conviction pursuant to a child welfare?
That's a great question to ask.
That should be the one question. And then when I talked about the crime aspect of it, Amber, is this is another ongoing conversation we're having on our Let Our Children Go show, that people can also find on Rumble, but is it's an undefined crime. Define abuse and neglect. What is that? I mean, you know, some of these state laws, when you read them, especially in Kentucky, it talks about not providing adequate food, shelter, or medical care. Well, what does adequate mean? You know, I mean, if I have a family of seven, is there a state law that says that I have to have a certain amount of food in my refrigerator, a certain kind of food in my refrigerator? Is there a state law that says that I have to do what a doctor says, that if I don't think that a procedure is good for my child, that I don't have the right to refuse that? What law says that? You know, so define that, because all these other crimes that we have in our society, to have a civil society, are defined crimes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you think of murder, we know what that is. You know, we know what rape, we know what robbery, yes, we know what theft is. We know what all these other crimes are. And yet, as parents, how are we supposed to function with any kind of security in our country, where even if you're charged with a crime, what is the crime that I can take actions in providing and taking care of my family that would prevent a charge of a crime from occurring? Right now, it's just arbitrary. It's whatever. It's like someone will just make the allegation and then they will just come up with something, and it's totally arbitrary and you have no way of preventing it.
Right. But that's a great point.
What happened after you were put in jail? How that proceeded after that? Just so for the audience, that you were just allowed to walk out of the jail the next
day? Yeah, well, the next day after they got a hold of all seven of our children, just so people can fill in the gap on that, they called my name about 20 to 22 hours after I was initially arrested falsely. And they never said, you know, your charges are dismissed. They just said, you're just released. And so I go to my attorney's office and he said, oh, I'm sorry that happened. And he typed up a work release letter for me. And I have this letter. And in the letter, it says Mark has not been charged with a crime. Okay. And so I wasn't charged with a crime. So it's the fraudulent. The whole thing is fraudulent because they framed it as a civil proceeding, but we were never in any contract with anyone in government for the welfare of our child. And so we refused to comply with services, Amber. And because we refused to comply with services, even though we went back to future proceedings and every attempt to get our children back, we were filing motions. The attorneys that we had would not file the motions. And so eventually we had to get rid of them. And so the one attorney that we both had initially going into court on April the 6th, he refused to continue to represent Terry because she hung up on the judge. And so we ended up getting another court appointed attorney for Terry. And so they split us across the courtroom and they want us to comply with these services. Now, being a veteran and taking that oath to support and defend the Constitution, I know that the 13th Amendment says that we are not to be subject to the government for involuntary servitude unless we've been convicted of a crime. I encourage everyone to go do your own search. There's two parts to the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution. One is no slavery. Okay, and we're not to be subject to involuntary servitude unless we've been convicted of a crime. Now that would only mean a government action, because only government can prosecute a crime.
Correct. Okay?
It wouldn't mean anything else. So because we refuse, go ahead,
Amber. I want to make a really big point right now. Okay, because they went after you, the protector of your family. They have gone after men across the country to demoralize them, to make them feel like idiots, to take the leadership role that God had put in every single man and to try and convince him he is not the leader, he is not the protector. Every TV show I ever have seen growing up, the husband was always the buffoon. Like, why would a woman marry an idiot? I mean, there's no pleasure in marrying an idiot. That's so annoying to be around someone who's an idiot. You want someone who you can have conversations with, to have a relationship, a friendship with, that you love to be around them. That's why you marry someone, not because they're a buffoon. And so what they have done is demasculized men for so long. And here you are, a strong husband, a strong father, a strong leader, a strong leader within our nation. I mean, you're serving our nation, and they want to take you out because you're the biggest threat to your family, or to them, because they want your family.
Right.
And I want to make that point, because they have attacked men for so long and I'm tired of it. Yeah, we need men to stand up and take the God-given leadership role that God gave them. Remember what our Constitution said, that these are inalienable rights given by our Creator, not given by government, given by our Creator. And God gave every single man a role in leadership, a role in protecting, a role of making their family feel safe and strong. He made men very strong. And I'm not saying that women can't be any of this, these things. But God did. If you read in the Bible, God made these men this way. And it's a beautiful thing when we do things God's way. And right. So we just need more men to start realizing that God made you strong. God made you a leader. God made you the protector for such a time as this. And now is the time we have the Sound of Freedom. And it showed one man going in with no weapons, no radio, no backup to go save one girl that he didn't even know. So we need male leaderships like yourself, sir, and like Tim Ballard and others. And I think Donald Trump's a strong man because he was the one who started letting the world know about this child trafficking ring. No other president spoke as much as he did about it. God bless that man. I think he is a strong man. Does he have faults? He has his faults. I have faults. You have faults. We all have faults. But I think God picked him for such a time as this because he was strong in who he was as a person. And I just want to make that very clear that they are seriously going after men so that children are more vulnerable. You know why they let single women, like they really push the single men, the single women thing, give a lot of services to single moms? Because there's no husband or father there to protect the kids when they want to come get them. It's easier to take them from one parent than two. Think about it. It's all by design.
Right. Well, Amber, I know that we may be coming up on, you know, some time challenges here, but I want to, you know, we'll continue on as long as you'd like, but just out of respect to you and your audience, there's a couple other key points that I want to highlight here. Because we would not comply with the services and I'm, you know, going to uphold my oath, just because, you know, it's the right thing to do, a person of integrity. You know, we're taught in the service, you know, in the Air Force especially, there were three core values: integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. And so, you know, being faithful to the oath, but you know, it's also a religious issue for us because, you know, the scriptures are very clear about if you take an oath that you are to keep your oath, that you're to keep that. And, you know, so I feel like that, you know, I've been deprived of many of, we've been deprived, Terry and I both, and our children for that matter, have been deprived of many of our rights. And those are all federal crimes in and of themselves. But the way this played out was because we would not comply with services that they gave permanent custody of our children to the girlfriend of Terry's father and her father. And that's what it was intended. That's what it was pre-planned to be from the very beginning. But over time, even after a court order that they were to keep all seven children together, we later discovered that they split our children up between those two and Terry's half aunt that I spoke about earlier. So the sibling bond was broken in addition to the parental bond. And then they put our children into one of the worst public schools systems there in Kentucky, especially in Jefferson County. And what we later discovered was that within 8 months or so after Amy was put into the public school system, that she became a governor scholar for the state of Kentucky, which was a result of our educational investment in her, even though they alleged that we educationally neglected them. So, you know, all of the evidence shows no abuse, no neglect, but there's allegations of abuse and neglect. And they're going to run their script and they're going to steal the American people's money, because there's probably a very good reason as to why the girlfriend of Terry's father is not married to her father, especially when she's been involved in with kids over the years. And that, is she getting the big Title IV money? You know, if you have seven kids, getting $2,000 thereabouts, and then where is that money going? Well, to answer that question, we began to see similar images on the CPS documents that we received and on court documents that we had received in the mail and were given to us by the attorney. And we went into the court file in November of 2016 and at a quarter for each copy that we had to pay for, even though we were representing ourselves, and then to certify at $5 each, we saw similar images, a very distinctive writing style. And then we had saved documents that the girlfriend of Terry's father had written to us, a letter going back to 2013. And then we were able to acquire a party invitation that Terry's half aunt was also involved with back to 2005. And then other notes that this woman had written to us. And we saw the same distinctive writing characteristics, even some similar exact images as if they had been scanned onto these court documents. And the way I came up with that was I went through every document that we had, along with the source documentation I referenced that she had given us, her letters and the party invitation. And I scanned all the documents, extracted all the images, A through Z, 0 through 9, PowerPointed them all, lined them all up, and definitively can show with over 1,100 images, actually over 1,200, that she has been acting as a mole in a child trafficking ring there, and that she is the ringleader. And most likely her brother, who appeared to be there in an unmarked car on March 30th. We have video of that, and we have what appears to be his image as he temporarily stepped out of the vehicle. But we want to ask those questions, but we can't get into a court to ask those questions right now. But, you know, when you have evidence of a compromised and controlled court system, you know, when it came time to appeal, we didn't feel like there was a place to appeal with that kind of an infiltration as to how much of a compromise exists in that court system there. And so we went through every law enforcement agency available to us. And we went to every law enforcement agency in the state of Kentucky, up through the Department of Criminal Investigations, the Attorney General, Andy Beshear, who is now the governor. We went to the governor at the time, Matt Bevin. And when we were identifying the federal crimes, more than 50 felonies and twice as many misdemeanors, we reported them to the FBI. Went to the FBI more than 5 times, gave them just about all of our evidence that we could up to that point. And kept going back to their office, and they did nothing for us. So we continued up the chain. And we actually met with the U.S. Attorney's office in May of 2018. And we had a HHS investigator there with a victim's advocate and an assistant U.S. attorney. Spent an hour and 20, 30 minutes or so with us. And he said, if you can show me evidence of a federal crime, he said, I'll move this along. So we showed him all that evidence, you know, the fraudulent attainment of the American people's Social Security money through this trafficking ring. And he was convinced enough on the evidence to forward it back to Kentucky. He made a copy for himself. And when they forwarded to Kentucky, in short, the response we got from the U.S. Attorney's office there was that they had looked at it, but that if we wanted to have something done, we needed to contact the FBI. And I knew there was no way that they could have looked at it, because if they had seen all of the crime reports that we had already submitted to the FBI, they would not have told us to go to the FBI if they had already known that we had been to the FBI. Why would you say that if you had looked at it? There was no way that they looked at it. They probably saw it as just, oh, here's another CPS case, and you know, we're just gonna give this as a superficial look, not gonna dig into it, and then just dismiss it. Well, we continued up the chain. And so we went to the highest levels of the Department of Justice. We went to, you know, the Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General, the Inspector General, because, you know, the complicity and the accessories that were becoming apparent, you know, at this time, this is when all of the stuff in respect to the corruption and the unlawful actions in the Department of Justice were coming out after the 2016 election, up to the 2016 election, and the 2017 election, even up to the current day. And so all this time we were involving our senators, Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell. Rand Paul was the most engaged. And Thomas Massey, Brad Winstrup, after we had to relocate and, you know, in Southern Ohio. And, you know, we wanted to have a congressional inquiry as to why the Department of Justice was not investigating the crimes. And, you know, a lot of things that we had heard at the state level was that they have immunity. You know, they have these immunities for criminal and civil liability. And we discovered a federal law. And I would really like everyone to take a look at this, because it's very important. And I'm going to give you the reference here. It's U.S. Code. It's Title 42, Chapter 21, Section 1981. And this law was put in place back in the 1970s as something that probably came about as a result of the work of Dr. Martin Luther King and the Civil
Rights. Title 42?
Yep, Title 42. Title 42, U.S. Code Title 42, Chapter 21, Section 1981. And in there, it says that all persons under the jurisdiction of the United States shall have the same right in every state to sue and be subject to like pains, punishments, and penalties. And a couple of key points with that law is it identifies it as a right to have to be able to sue for remedy and to have criminal justice. And all persons under the jurisdiction of the United States, that involves everyone in government, outside of government, anybody who is a citizen and on the soil of the United States of America is subject to that. And so all 50 states, after the time of the adoption of the Safe Families Act, came up with these immunity laws pursuant to child welfare actions. Well, in paragraph C of that U.S. code that I just referenced, it says it protects against color impairment under the color of state law. And so what we have happening is we have an usurpation happening within our country to where they're enacting laws, even though we have a federal law that says that they can't do this, to prevent civil remedy and criminal justice. And so, you know, at one point in our country, we took the Pledge of Allegiance with liberty and justice for all. You can't have justice for all if you've got people that are immunized under the color of law. Even when we have a federal law that identifies it as a right, like you said earlier, Amber, that comes to us from our creator, they're unalienable. They can't be taken away. And so these deprivations of rights are actually additional violations of federal law. Title 18, which is a criminal statute, Title 18, Chapter 13, Sections 241 and 242. And those are also criminal felony and misdemeanor crimes. And so the conspiracy to defraud, the deprivations of our rights, and the fact that we would not comply, we've been punished, even though we've not been convicted of a crime, let alone charged with one, we've been punished, which is a violation of the Eighth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment, to be punished for something that isn't even punitive in nature, to not have our children for now 7 years. We are dealing with an usurpation. We're dealing with a seditious operation in our country. And this is happening in all 50 states, not just to a family like ours. But, you know, Terry's going to talk a little bit here for a minute or two. Yeah. In effect, the damage being done to children, the family unit itself. And this is very important because there was a communist Soviet leader years ago. His name was Lenin. One of his quotes was, "You destroy the family, you can destroy the country."
That's exactly right. My sociology professor, Arizona State University, said that. He said right. Those exact words. He said, if you want communism to come into a country, you destroy the family unit. You weaken the family, you weaken society. That's what he said.
Right. And so I just want to touch on one more high point that Terry just kind of cued me in on. This is so damaging, not just on the children, but on the family unit itself. We ended up in a homeless situation, as do many families.
Yes.
Who go through this. Yep. They are so debilitated. And, you know, people will say, well, you need to get an attorney. Well, a lot of the attorneys are involved in this little racket that they've got going on. And very few are willing to take it on for the various reasons, like the immunity laws or the fact that they know that families are so debilitated. And it hurt us to such an extent that not only being made homeless, but it's still hurting us to the current day, because in August of 2016, they began taking child support money from my military pension.
Oh my God.
To the tune of $45,000 that they've stolen fraudulently pursuant to this scheme. And I have a crime committed against me every month where they steal the money. And then they've got their fingers, they can just come in and raid your bank account whenever they want it, which affects all of the other affairs in your life. And, you know, Terry, being a homeschooling mom, she wasn't working outside the home. Her job, that was her mission. That was what she wanted to do.
Right.
That was her ambition to have fulfillment in her life. She wanted to be a mother and a domestic manager. That was her thing. And she did a great job at it. But they are now subjecting her to child support, which is in a way kind of like a de facto way of forced labor, which is also a federal crime because, you know, and so, look, we are not going to comply with anything in respect to this fraudulent operation, but they're stealing our money. They're stealing the American people's money, and they're destroying lives and livelihoods. And every child is at risk. Every parent is at risk to this current day. And so, you know, our mission, and this is what Terry's going to talk about here in a minute, in respect to the damage of children, we have two organizations. One is the Heritage and Freedom Coalition, which people can find at h3fc.com. That's the one I oversee. And I'll let Terry talk about the mission of Let Our Children Go. But, you know, we want to build local action networks because our representatives are not listening to us. And we, the people, have the power. And we're going to be a country of, by, and for the people. But only if we, the people, exercise that power. So what you're doing and highlighting this, not just with us, but many other families, and that's why also we're out here, is for them, to be a voice for them too, because there's many of them across the country who are too afraid to speak. But we're not going to be afraid because we know we did nothing wrong. That's another question people ask. Well, what did you do wrong? Well, we didn't do anything wrong. Okay. We did all the right things that we knew we could do. But if you're sitting out there thinking that this is just, you know, this horrible story for us, you know, we had come across one story and, you know, we didn't know what was going on. We thought that was just terrible. But I remember saying, well, that isn't going to happen to us. And then shortly thereafter, it did happen to us. And so it can and will happen to you.
And let me ask you this. You guys said you are people of faith. How has this affected your faith? Did you decide to turn away from God altogether and be like, oh, I hate God now? I mean, tell me about that part of your life, because this is a real thing people deal with.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question because, you know, Terry and I, we just love each other a lot. And, you know, we love our children. We had a great home and we still love our children. And but we love our Creator and Redeemer above all things. And that's what makes our marriage work and our love to be so meaningful and real, is we know His love for us. And that is what's carried us through, and that we have faith that in Romans 8:28, that He causes all things to work together for good.
Yep.
And, you know, that even though this was evil that was thrust upon us, and it's an ongoing evil, Amber, there's a whole other side to our story that we really haven't spoken about in public yet, to even get us to a point where we can be talking to you like this today and get out of a homeless situation, even though there's still a risk of that in our life. But because of great people, you know, advocates, and that's what we need, is a lot of advocates across the country to help families. You know, what can you do? There's a family in your area that needs help in respect to what we're talking about. So find out about what's really going on instead of just listening to the lying narrative. And so it's, you know, it is a struggle, but we have faith in the Word and the presence of His Spirit that He is going to work all of this out, that, you know, the Almighty is all about justice and that He will bring it about in due time. And, you know, we know that His people will answer the call, and we know that you're answering the call and highlighting this and being courageous, because, you know, there's a lot of terror out there. And, but, you know, if we're going to be a home of the brave, we got to act like it. So, so we have, you know, the Let Our Children Go mission is about building those local action networks, because our aim is to stop this. You know, part of the ASFA that some families will be subject to is a termination of their parental rights. And if you think about those words, you know, our government was established in our Declaration of Independence to secure our rights. Mm-hmm. And it says that whenever any form of government becomes destructive against these things, and not just about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but the security of our rights,
they need to be abolished.
That we have to fix it. We have to fix it. And so when you start seeing language and families are subject to termination of their rights, you know, you'll hear TPR, parental rights, termination of parental rights. Government does not have the authority to terminate our rights. Our rights, the parent, don't come to us from the government. And they come to us from our Creator. They're inherent. And so when you have laws that are enacted like that, I think it was Thomas Jefferson said that when tyranny becomes law, rebellion becomes duty. And he used the word rebellion. I would prefer to use the word action. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, doing all of these interviews and these shows, and Amber, it's great. You do a great job with your show and highlighting not just this issue, but many others. But these things will only serve a purpose if we act upon them. Okay. And we need to let our representatives in Congress, the heart of our republic, know that we don't approve this. And so the question for all of you Americans out there is, do you approve of this? Do you consent to this? Because this is not American, what's happening.
Let me show you this really quick before we get to Terry. Mm-hmm. I want to show you this article that I found. Parents, don't let Washington State take your children. Current state law already enables minors 13 and older to obtain puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and body mutilation surgeries without parental knowledge or consent. But with SB 5599, minors of any age who are seeking gender-affirming care will be hidden from their parents and placed in a host home so they can obtain all these medical given permission by their state appointed guardian instead of their parents, regardless of age. This really backs up everything you just said.
Yeah, the Associated Press had a headline on that issue. If you put in trans, I think it was something like trans minors protected from parents. Trans minors protected from parents. And that was the Associated Press that put that out. Do you see
that? Oh, I see that article. I'll share it with you real quick. Wow. Isn't it the parents' right? And isn't it the parents' job to protect the children? This is insane. This is like upside down and backwards. This is the article. Trans minors protected from parents under Washington law.
Yeah, so that's the mainstream news.
This is disgusting.
Putting that out. That's not some, you know, that's not, what is it? Babylon Bee, right? Mm-hmm. It's like we're into that's the realm that we're in now. And so it is a huge threat to families with the trans issue that's going on, they can say that they could go as far probably to say that a parent is medically neglecting or emotionally neglecting a child, mm-hmm. that they won't affirm. I did find on the government website for guidance for foster parents. It's I've got it on my Twitter, noted, the .gov, the guidance for foster parents to affirm children. And you just can look at the administration and the people that are in there that this is no shock. This is happening. And, there's so many different ways that these people can get into your lives, whether it's a nosy neighbor, a disgruntled family member, a concerned teacher, a doctor that you don't agree with, a dentist that you don't agree with. I mean, so for people to think that their family is not at risk is just not reality at this point. And you're not just dealing with CPS when they show up at your door. You're dealing with the court. You're dealing with the people with the guns. So, the reality is, that this is happening and it is a threat to children. And for your audience that isn't aware, there's also something called Adult Protective Services. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have an autistic child that, is an adult and somebody that's disabled or an elderly person. So this situation doesn't necessarily just affect children. It can also have an effect on adults. But for the people out there that have children or care about children, this is an issue that people can really get behind and help us to raise awareness because the children are in harm's way. One of the things that I like to do on our social platforms is when the mainstream news reports on foster parents being arrested for abuse of a child or, you know, mm-hmm. something that, to that effect, that the foster children are in danger. The trafficking pipeline that comes out of the foster system is a huge issue. So, you know, that's something that needs to be highlighted,
mm-hmm.
but that is a fruit of the problem, where we want people to start talking about the root of the problem, which is children that are being unlawfully separated from their loving families and placed with strangers or placed in an environment that is not under the protection of their parents that love them. And so we want to protect the children. And the way that we can protect the children is by protecting the parents. Because if the parents don't have the ability to protect the child, and the state can just come in and remove the child, like what you were pointing out there with that Washington State issue, you know, the children they're in a dangerous situation. So one of the things that we like to do is to highlight, you know, as Mark did so well with, you know, talking about, have the parents been convicted of a crime in order for the child to even be in a foster care situation to begin with? And then if the parents are incarcerated or have been convicted of something, why are the children maybe not always being placed with relatives or what some places call fictive kin, which would be like friends of the family or something to that,
right.
to that regard. Now, I know that in Arizona is actually one of the better states, it seems, when you look at the statistics for relative placement, whereas Kentucky, at one time, they were in last place. They're up to third place from the bottom now, the last time I checked the statistics that were out for that relative type placement. They also will use what they'll call fictive kin. What I wanted to do, Amber, before we close out, was I wanted to share with your audience what we're trying to do with Let Our Children Go, how that got started, and just share some information about that, because that's really a big part of why we do what we're doing, is to get the information out and to try to join together with other families and advocates that this is happening to. So I can just go into that unless you had any.
Yeah. Yeah. If you could. Yeah. I do have to jump on another interview soon, but yeah, please do that.
Yeah. So, so we've started an organization called Let Our Children Go, and you can find that at .org. Because there is a .com, that's not us. So go to letourchildrengo.org. And when you're there, there's a contact page that you can fill out, and that will get you in touch with us to our email. Or I think her email is also, if you go to the bottom of one of the pages, I think you can maybe find the email address. But what we would like for people to do is if you're watching this and you want to be an advocate for the children, or you have had this happen to your own family and you want to share your story, or you just want to connect with us to help us to raise awareness and to come together to help stop it, you can just send us a message there and we'll get that. And then there's other information there about our own story. We're still building things. We do have two ambassadors now for our organization, General Flynn's sister, Mary.
Mary O'Neill. I love her so much.
Yeah, we love Mary. She's been a great support to us. She had her own grandchildren taken at one point and put into the foster system. So she knows a lot about what's going on with this issue with family court. And so she is an ambassador for Let Our Children Go. And then recently we've been able to, it's not on the website yet, but I can announce it. Laura Logan is also an ambassador for Let Our Children Go.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah. So we're really thankful for both of them, because when you're dealing with the larger issue of human trafficking, which Mary is and Laura are doing with the organization there,
America's Future.
When you're dealing with the larger issue of human trafficking, then you get into the subcomponents. And so what we're trying to hone in on is the issue with what's going on with families and children through the Child Protective Services and the family court system. And so it's really great to be able to connect in that way, because then when they're out in an event and somebody's like, oh, CPS is, you know, and then we can sort of work together. And, you know, because people don't have time to handle, you know, all these different issues that are going on in our country. So we want to work together with different people and different organizations and have that network, so that when we come across somebody, I know you had Tamsin and Reggie on, and we were connected with them through our network from somebody else. Oh, well, here, go talk to, you know, and so, and now we've been in touch with them for a long time now. And, you know, it's just great that we can all work together like that, because it can get really overwhelming to feel like, you know, there's all these problems, but when we can work together with each other and have a network to help and support people in different areas and issues that they're dealing with, you know, that's what we're hoping to be able to provide in this area. So anytime that anybody wants to reach out to us, probably the easiest way is just to go to the website, letourchildrengo.org, and reach out to us there. And our mission is to raise awareness. And one of the ways that people can help us do that is by amplifying the stuff that we're putting out on socials. You can find us on Telegram, on Twitter, on Instagram, et cetera. Just look for Let Our Children Go and look for the Daisy flower. That's our logo. One of our children's name is Daisy, and we have 7 petals for our 7 children. So it's real easy to find us that way. So helping to raise awareness. And then as we continue to work to stop what's happening, if there's any attorneys out there that want to help with lawsuits, you know, reach out to us. We've got a little bit sort of a loose network of attorneys at this point that are becoming aware. A lot of people just aren't aware, I think, that this is happening, that they're doing it in the way that they're doing it. And because of the privacy, they say is the, I think one of the reasons they are able to get away with the closed courtrooms and et cetera is because of saying that it's for the privacy of the children. But yet you can go out on these adoption websites and they've got the pictures of the kids, the names, what they like. And so, you know, there's ways that you can protect children's identity and court proceedings. But I think one of the things is that some of these maybe constitutionally minded attorneys that are out there don't even know that it's happening. So we're hoping to build a network of those also to help families. And then our third part of our mission is to help with the restoration for the families because of the damage and the trauma that is caused to the children and the parents when this happens. And then once they're able to reunite with their children, whether it is once, you know, if they are able to get their children back while they're still underage, or if it's not until the child turns 18 or older, and trying to help the families with the restoration that goes on in that process. We want to be able to help facilitate that and be a support to families in that regard, as we're having to learn how to do with our own family now that our children are getting older. So that's a little bit about our mission and what we're hoping to do. And we just really appreciate you giving us the opportunity to share our story. I know it can get really long when we start getting into the details of our specific story. So for anybody that stayed on this long, thank you for listening. And we just hope that people will be able to share the information and join with us and let other people know that they're not alone.
Thank God for what you guys are doing. You're turning something hurtful that happened to you into something positive. We're going to trust God that he will return your kids. Nothing is impossible for God. The story of Joseph is what comes to mind when I think of you, because Joseph was sold into slavery and then became second under Pharaoh. So who knows what's in store for your children, that, you know, positive things in store for your children and your family. So thank you guys so much for coming on the program. I really, really do appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on the Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at the Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Socially Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on the Amber May Show.